U.S. President Joe Biden reassures President Marcos America will defend the Philippines from external threats. Later on in the program, we'll tackle climate justice under the Marcos administration with Secretary Robert Borge, Vice Chairperson of the Climate Change Commission. The Justice Department will ask a Manila court to reconsider its ruling junking government's case that sought to declare the CPP-NPA a terrorist organization. And close to 300 Chinese nationals linked to illegal pogos will be deported by Manila. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Our top story at this hour, U.S. President Joe Biden reaffirms his country's ironclad commitment to protect the Philippines from external forces. That's following his meeting with Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. on the sidelines of the 77th UN General Assembly. Pia Gutierrez found this report.
Philippines and the United States affirmed their commitment to strengthen bilateral ties during the meeting of President Joe Biden and President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. The meeting happened today at the sidelines of the UN General Assembly here in New York, where both leaders participated, and they discussed opportunities to expand bilateral cooperation on a wide range of issues, including COVID recovery, energy security, climate action, and infrastructure. And according to a statement by the White House, President Biden reaffirmed his country's ironclad commitment to its mutual defense treaty with the Philippines. This agreement holds both countries to come to each other's defense in case of an attack against one of them, a matter that has become very important to the Philippines amid tensions in the West Philippine Sea. The South China Sea issue was also discussed, and both Biden and Marcos underscored their support for freedom of navigation and overflight, as well as the peaceful resolution of disputes. Also among the topics discussed during the meeting, Russia's war against Ukraine and its implications for energy prices and food security, as well as ASEAN matters, the crisis in Burma, and the importance of respect for human rights.
I expect we'll discuss the South China Sea and disputes in critical global throughway. I've spent a lot of time with not only the president of China, but others, about the international waters and how they have to be respected. And we should talk about that a little bit, I hope. And we're also, thank you for your position on the war against Ukraine and by Russia, and how it's impacting energy prices and food prices. And we're working very hard to be able to do something about that. And so we want to talk about human rights, talk about a whole range of things, but I'm mainly interested to know what's on your mind and how we can continue to strengthen this relationship. And again, congratulations.
The relationship, the 100-plus-year-old relationship between the Philippines and the U.S. continues to evolve as we face the challenges of this new century and the events that we have been watching over the past few months. Really. So we have very much to discuss in terms of redefining, I suppose, in many ways. But the role of the United States in maintaining the peace in our region is something that is much appreciated by all the countries in the regions, and the Philippines especially. We feel that we are especially fortunate because we have a very strong foundation of a very long relationship and strong relationships on various facets, not only political, not only diplomatic, but also economic.
An interesting fact about this meeting, the palace says that out of several requests by world leaders who attended the UN General Assembly, President Biden only accommodated one request, and that request was the request of the Philippines for their meeting with President Marcos Jr. The palace says that they are uncertain why the U.S. president chose to hold bilateral talks only with Marcos Jr., but hopes that Biden's decision is telling of the how the United States regards the Philippines as an important ally and partner.
That is our very own Pia Gutierrez reporting from New York. The time to do business in the Philippines is now. That's according to President Marcos, as he again urged American investors to take part in the country's economic resurgence. Speaking before the American business community, Marcos said the Philippines is on a path to a strong recovery following the pandemic, with its economic performance poised to surpass its ASEAN peers.
To secure the Philippines' bright economic future, my government will swing the doors even wider for high-value investments from both the domestic and international business communities, with a sharp focus on broad-based job creation, the expansion of digital infrastructure, research and development. It is our belief that the Philippines is the smart investment choice, and the best time to do business with us is now. We have grand opportunities, the timing, the window of opportunities for investment, and especially in capital intensive investments in the Philippines, which is what we need now. We believe that time is now.
Well, in his address before the UN General Assembly, President Marcos took rich nations to task for not doing more to fight climate change. About a day later, it was Marcos's turn on the hot seat, with climate activist Greta Thunberg saying there can be no climate justice under Marcos, whom she described as a fascist leader. Joining us now for his reaction is Secretary Robert Borge. He is the vice chairperson of the Climate Change Commission. Secretary, good to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Carmina. It's good to see you again, and it's always a pleasure to join your program.
All right.
Thank you.
Let's cut to the chase here. What climate action can we expect from this administration?
Climate action that we can expect from this administration has been very clear. This was during the inaugural. This was stated by the president in his inaugural address, and then reiterated again in SONA, and then articulated yet again, emphasized in the United Nations General Assembly 77th session. And climate justice is key for our nation to really respond to the impacts of climate change. But the first thing that needs to be underscored here is, for climate justice, we need climate finance. Mm. The message of President Marcos was very significant in both substance and delivery. By identifying climate change as the first of four global challenges, he demonstrated deep understanding and appreciation of the existential problem of climate change. And he also laid out the principled basis of consensus and agreement as climate justice and equity. And then he also stressed that the locus of global action, therefore, is climate finance. And mm-hmm. This is what we're working on. Because, as the president said, resources are very limited, and developing nations that are at risk and vulnerable to climate change and its impacts need the support of developed nations. And he came on very powerfully, very strongly, and very articulate that mm-hmm. those who are responsible for climate change need to do more. It is their responsibility.
We're going to talk more about climate finance, loss and damage, as well as the basis of that in a moment. But first, the statement of climate activist Greta Thunberg that climate justice cannot be attained under this administration. Your thoughts on that?
The president shared a very clear vision of what the world needs to do and what the Philippines is willing to do on its part. He also identified pathways for urgent action to achieve climate justice, including the need to effectively harness multilateralism, that's the UN framework, to achieve this end. Now, climate justice is something that we hope and are committed to turning into a reality. And climate justice is something that we should all work for, because it is what our country, what our people, and what our world needs. It is a powerful call for action based on justice and equity. And we can all agree, I think, Carmina, that climate change is an aspiration that we all share, and its success is something we should work hard together to achieve. It's a very challenging, but also a very hopeful message. And I think everybody can agree that it's something that we need to work hard together. It's not just the Philippines' call. It's the entire world's responsibility to achieve climate justice.
But it also doesn't mean that as we wait for the rest of the world, that we should not do anything within
Correct.
Our shores. So when you talk about climate justice
and climate finance as a vehicle to attain this. But the basis of that, according to some, should be the very theory of loss and damage. So on the part of the Climate Change Commission, what is the necessary first step to attain climate justice here in the country?
Well, to attain climate justice in the Philippines, it of course underscores the supposition that both government needs to do more and that we need a whole of society approach. And in this regard, it is incumbent upon our government to further capacitate and provide programs and projects and pathways for our nation to be climate resilient and climate smart collectively, and also to address this at the local level, because what happens is it's really the LGUs that feel the brunt of the climate change. And this is why it's under the law, the Climate Change Commission has been mandated under the People's Survival Fund to provide financial assistance to LGUs. But it's not just that. It's a whole of government approach as well. In fact, for this particular NEP, we have increased when it comes to the expenditure tagging for climate change projects of our national government institutions. It's increased to 453.1 billion pesos. And this shows the commitment of the Marcos administration to do what we can. However limited our resources are, we're doing what we can and what we must achieve or rather address the impacts of climate change urgently. But we have to go beyond that as well. Here at the Climate Change Commission, we formalized the mechanism for consultation with our bilateral partners. Early on in July, we've met with our stakeholders and we've identified about 77 billion pesos worth of funding for climate change projects. But is that all that we should do? Of course, we're not doing that. I would say that when it comes to mitigation, the whole of government is working very hard to ensure that we have the just transition from a coal-based energy economy to a cleaner economy through the energy transition mechanism of the Department of Finance. Our government is working very hard to make sure that the enabling environment is there to achieve investments in this important sector. But again, it takes time. So what do we need to do? We also need to harness multilateralism. And this is very important, not just as a logistical issue, but also a political and a moral issue. Because again, climate justice is something that we need to ask and we need to demand from those who are most responsible. And these are the developed nations. And these are the carbon majors who, across the centuries, have made it possible for us to come to this point in our existence here on Earth.
Well, Secretary Borja, you just said it takes time to achieve all this. And time is something that we do not have.
We do not have.
By
Correct.
Year 2050, the economic cost of loss and damage in developing countries is estimated to be between $1 to $1.8 trillion. And for the Philippines, though, how are you addressing this projection? Because we cannot just look to next year and the year after that. As I said a while ago, we're running out of time, and the future and the picture of that future is bleak.
Correct. And it is a, how do you say this? It's a rude awakening for everybody that, you know, everything is coming to a head in our generation. The errors of the past, the misgovernance, the problems that we've created for ourselves, unfortunately, has to come to our generation to act on. Again, we do not have the time. That's why we need to act urgently. But it's something that governments must do, the entire society must do. And I must say that here, at least here in the Philippines, we are doing as much as we can. Investments are necessary. Policy frameworks need to be done. Also, behavioral changes need to be done because it's the governance issue of the day. It's not just energy. It's not just agriculture. It's not just transportation. It truly is the governance issue of the day.
Well, as a final question, Secretary Borja, as the whole world responded to the pandemic, moving massive resources to contain it, how possible is it that the same thing can be done to address loss and damage due to climate change, particularly for vulnerable nations like ours?
I can answer that diplomatically, or I can answer that as frankly as I can. And I think it is in the interest of the Filipino nation, and this is what President Marcos wants to happen. It can be done, but it is difficult. And it requires the political will, not only of the developing nations, but also the developed nations and the carbon majors. It is, to our mind, a moral responsibility, and it is a legal responsibility. And it requires action on all sectors' parts. And I was just in Egypt for the informal consultations, and there is a glimmer of hope. And by the pronouncements made at the UN General Assembly on its 77th session, including the powerful statement of President Marcos, and if you can refer also to the statement of the UN Secretary General, I think now is really the time when the world is hearing the entire peoples of the world and demanding, and that demand is important for action to happen very soon. But in the meantime, we have to do our part to mitigate the impacts of climate change. It's a huge responsibility, but something that we should not shirk away from. And it's something that's a priority of this Marcos administration.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Secretary Robert Borge, the Vice Chairperson of the Climate Change Commission. As always, thanks for joining us today. A pleasure talking to you. Take care.
Always an honor for me, Carmina.
And from there, we're going to move on to other news. Several House lawmakers questioned the huge increase in the proposed budget for the Vice President's office, which includes 500 million pesos for confidential activities. RJ Cruz reports.
Only the allies of former Vice President Lenny Robredo critiqued the over 2.2 billion peso proposed budget of Vice President Sara Duterte for the office of the Vice President for 2023. One lawmaker notes previous VPs did not need such a huge sum, as the VP only has one job, to be a spare tire. The OVP now enjoys the highest budget growth among all government agencies.
From the second half of 2016 to the first half of 2022, the total appropriations for the office of the Vice President amounted to only 3,836,846,000 for a period of 6 years. This proposed total appropriation for 2023 is 258.52% higher than the average appropriation for the office of the Vice President for the past 6 years.
Kabataan Representative Raul Manuel wanted VP Sara to continue VP Lenny's projects.
Nakakapagtaka kung bakit yung mga magandang nasimula ng office of the Vice President ay hindi natin nakikita doon sa current plans.
At this point, we are already on COVID recovery programs, and therefore, the strategies that will be implemented in the operation of post-COVID operations will be different. And that includes livelihood programs, economic recovery programs.
ACT Teachers Representative Franz Castro, however, feels Duterte's projects duplicate the work of other agencies. The OVP, however, says they actually complement other agencies.
Rest assured that the Office of the Vice President will be implementing these programs and projects with the consideration of being complementary. So it will not be a duplication in whatever services that other agencies are giving.
Lagman says other VPs did not need a 500 million peso confidential fund, as he called for the OVP to submit their plans for the budget. In the end, though, these lawmakers still want the fund gone. Vice President Sara Duterte is leaving it up to the House of Representatives to decide on the fate of the multi-million peso confidential funds for her office.
The office of the Vice President must heed the popular clamor on the reduction of her budget, which is excessively huge compared to the previous budgets of the former Vice Presidents, particularly on the allocation of a 500 million confidential fund.
The Honorable Vice President has just shared it with me now that she's saying she defers to the decision of the majority of this Honorable Congress.
They also want the 150 million peso confidential fund in the Department of Education, which Duterte concurrently heads, realign to the Child Protection Program and Special Education Program for Children with Special Needs. The DepEd says they will fund the SPED internally, while it was non-committal on the proposals for the realignment of the confidential fund. RG Cruz, ABS-CBN News.
We'll take a break now. Up ahead, hundreds of Chinese nationals linked to illegal pogo activities set to be deported this month. Details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with ANC. And we're back. Here's Sue with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. U.S. President Joe Biden reassures President Marcos America will defend the Philippines from external threats. The Justice Department will ask a Manila court to reconsider its ruling, junking government's case that sought to declare the CPP-NPA a terrorist organization. And close to 300 Chinese nationals linked to illegal pogos will be deported by Manila. Back with more news, the Philippine government planning to deport nearly 300 Chinese nationals linked to offshore gaming operations by the end of September. Philippine Justice Secretary Boyeng Remulla discussed that matter Thursday with China's interim chargé d'affaires Shou Shiyong. The Philippine Immigration Bureau also says they are in close coordination with the Chinese embassy to resolve the issue.
We are in continuous contact with the Chinese embassy. They've been very helpful in resolving many cases of illegal aliens here in the Philippines. We have close coordination with them, especially for fugitives. They give us regular information about Chinese fugitives that might be hiding here in the Philippines. They've been very helpful and they've been cooperative when it comes to resolving issues on deportation.
The Immigration Bureau also notes Chinese nationals who are working illegally here in the Philippines can legalize their stay as long as they can secure proper working visas. Remulla earlier claimed around 40,000 POGO workers are staying in the country illegally. The Philippine Justice Department says government's legal fight against communists, well, that's not over. That's after a Manila court junked its case to declare the Communist Party of the Philippines and the New People's Army as terrorists. Justice Secretary Remulla says the DOJ will file a motion for reconsideration, but he refused to comment on the position of the court that political acts and rebellion cannot be considered acts of terrorism.
We'll file a motion for reconsideration. Then we'll, if we have to, then we go to the Court of Appeals. And alam niyo naman, it's something that the state has to take care of when people are attacking the state. Kailangan natin kumilos, and we use the law for its purpose. And we will obey the law, whatever the case may be.
Bayan Muna Chairperson Neri Colmenares, meanwhile, lauds the Manila court's decision. Colmenares hopes the ruling will help stop government from red-tagging dissenters.
It only shows, and the judge noticed it, na parang they're just, you know, putting in names, na CPP-NPA, CPP-NPA. That's why the judge devoted a large portion, in fact, later on in her decision, on the dangers of red-tagging. Will it stop the NTFL cut? Well, I hope it will stop the entire government. Kasi alam mo, kaya lumalala at kaya natatalo sila, nag-overreach sila eh. Pwede namang itukoy mo yung isang tingin mo CPP-NPA o di kasuhan mo sa korte. Hindi yung ang artista ay CPP-NPA, yung pare ay CPP-NPA, yung Ateneo, yung Lasal. Lahat sila, bayan mo na, lahat ng activist at dissenter, pati si Lenny Robredo, CPP-NPA.
Meanwhile, former Bayan Muna Party List Representative Teddy Casino hopes the ruling will pave the way for meaningful peace talks, as well as government's respect to a person's right to dissent.
And we hope that the government finally, kumbaga, mabuksan ang isip ng pamahalaan para makatulong na tayo sa mas importanteng proseso ng pagresolba sa ugat ng labanan. Hopefully through peace negotiation. Ang naging effect kasi ng pag-tag na terorista yung armadong grupo is to legitimize their cause. No, kumbaga, kahit ano pang pinaglalaban mo dahil terorista ka, parang walang saysay yung pinaglalaban mo.
Joining us now to tackle the Manila Court's ruling is a former commissioner of the Commission on Human Rights, Roberto Cades. Attorney Cades, good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate you coming to the program.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right, so let's begin this discussion by focusing really just on human rights. Through the years, there have been human rights violations on both ends. As the CPP-NPA continue their armed struggle, as government continues its fight against insurgency, recently, a Manila court in its ruling said it is not difficult to see how the CPP-NPA's armed struggle and the violence that accompanies it to achieve its purpose may have earned the organizations the terrorist label. The court also said while armed struggle with the violence that necessarily accompanies it is indubitably the approved means to achieve the NPA's purpose, means is not synonymous with purpose. Now, the question is, how might this decision affect the armed struggle? Let's begin with that question.
All right. The real politic of it is that the court decision will not affect the armed struggle. What I mean is that the army will continue to go after the CPP-NPA, even if they are not regarded as a terrorist organization, as the court advises. And the CPP-NPA will continue to wage its war against the government, regardless of however it's tagged by the government.
Are you concerned that with this ruling, it may lead to more human rights violations?
I think the human rights violations will be the same. And also abuses, no? I mean, violations on the side of government and abuses on the part of the CPP-NPA will largely be the same. That is, again, the real politics of this. But insofar as non-combatants are concerned, especially those who are human rights defenders operating within the legal framework, that this court ruling should afford the human rights defenders better legal protection, especially if they are not red tagged anymore. But then my worry is the government will continue to red tag the parties and just ignore the court decision.
And that's exactly what is happening, which we're going to go to in a bit. But first, with this recent ruling, do you think it clearly defines now what the entities really are? And does it paint a clear picture moving forward? Or is that more of a hope, more of a wish than actual reality?
Yeah. You know, again, although the court has declared the CPP-NPA as not a terrorist organization, as I said earlier, the government, especially the NTF-ELCAC, will just continue to ignore such finding by the court. It will have the government will continue to do what it does in regard to the insurgency problem, and the CPP-NPA will continue to do what it does. My opinion is that the contribution of the court ruling, at least in regard to this specific question of yours, is more academic, more in refining our understanding of content. But whether or not, but even if, assuming that the government does understand what the court is saying, it will continue to, you know, to advocate the propaganda, continue to stick the propaganda that it does, because as you know, the insurgency war is not really an academic issue. It's an insurgency war, no? It's patayan ng mga parties as far as both parties are concerned.
But as we mentioned earlier, that you're sort of saying that everything will continue as is because that's in their DNA. You have the military forces go, or the armed forces going after insurgents, insurgents continuing their armed struggle. And this is what we're seeing right now. You have the NDF-LCAC disregarding the ruling. To them, they're still terrorists. So what do you think is or should be the logical next step here, if there is such a thing, after this court ruling?
The logical step? That's a difficult question. Because the court operates on a logical paradigm. There are three concepts. There is the law. It interprets the facts according to the law, and it says that the CPP NPA is not a terrorist organization. But will the government? Sorry for reverting back to this point always. But will the government, even as it understands rationally where the government, where the court is coming from? Will the government actually respect that finding of the court? I doubt it very much.
Do you think, though, do you share the same opinion that this can be seen as sort of a basis for the resumption of peace talks?
It should be. Actually, it should be. Because whether or not you... Let's look at it this way. Nobody negotiates with a terrorist organization. If government sincerely sees the CPP NPA as a terrorist organization, at least under the present dispensation, then it will not negotiate. If that is a sincere... And I'm talking of the highest level, not just NTF-LCAC. If the president views the CPP NPA as a terrorist organization, then he will not negotiate with them. But if he views the CPP NPA as a rebel organization, then it should. And it's never too late. In fact, negotiations should have started yesterday. Every day of the people are sitting across each other in the context of peace talks, means less violence for everybody. And especially those who are affected on the wayside, those who are mere human rights defenders that are red tagged in this insurgency war. Personally, and as a former commissioner of human rights, and also as a part of the peace process before under the Aquino the Pinoy administration, I see the benefit of pushing forward the peace negotiations between the parties, even if they are not as eager or as sincere in the beginning. Just sitting down across each other, talking to each other, is already a big step forward insofar as the country is concerned, and the parties also.
But given the history between the president's father and the armed struggle, are you still hopeful that this administration will not see them as terrorists, but will actually see them for what they are and what this court says they are? They are not terrorists, that they are fighting for a cause. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't believe that the Marcos Sr. saw the NPA as a terrorist organization. Perhaps on certain occasions he referred to them as terrorists. But, I know that in his heart and in his mind, he never saw the NPA, the CPP NPA, as a terrorist organization. And even if some elements within the revolutionary movement did actually commit certain acts that might be classified as terrorist acts, that does not make the CPP NPA a terrorist organization. And that does not justify the refusal of the government to negotiate with them. And going now forward to the present administration, I think that should also be the framework that should be adopted. by the president. Because in truth and in fact, the court decision is the correct decision. The CPP-NPA is not a terrorist organization, although I note that certain acts have been committed on both sides that may be classified as terroristic. The Philippine Army has, you know, committed atrocities that might be, you know, easily classified as terroristic, but that does not make the Philippine Army a terrorist organization under the government. The president himself can be, and I'm not referring to any particular president, but the president can be of a very terroristic demeanor, but that does not make the government a terroristic government, you know. So let's look at the organization, let's look at the objectives, the motives behind the actions of both parties, and let's, difficult as it is, let's always give parties a second chance to talk to each other. Even if at the end of the day the peace talks do not succeed, the period when they were negotiating, even if it just lasts for, you know, half a year, is already a positive step. Maybe less people died during the 6 month period.
That's still a step towards peace, no matter how short that is. You know, there's another thing that we have to look at here, and that is the problem of climate change. It is connected, but the connection is not immediately clear to everyone. Talk to us about how this can only exacerbate the situation, how climate change makes conflicts worse and can even be a threat multiplier to the Philippines in particular.
Climate change exacerbates all challenges to human rights, civil political rights, economic, social, cultural rights. All these challenges to these rights are magnified, multiplied by climate change, especially poverty and social injustice. And in a sense, when you know all the extreme weather events happened in our country, it increases the probability, because it magnifies poverty, of these people impacted in joining the insurgents movement, and if only to regain their dignity. You know, when you're already not eating 3 meals a day, and then climate change happens, and you're deprived of all your basic human rights, it's easy to join a revolutionary movement. So it does. And it also causes, during our climate inquiry, we notice that, you know, the forced migration that is caused on people by climate change. They abandon, especially the indigenous peoples, they seek better places within their ancestral domains. They encroach upon territories of other indigenous peoples, and there's competition for resources, and there is conflict. And also, I noticed during our hearing in Davao regarding the Haran report, one of the drivers of the big conflict that happened there was when the lair of the NPA was visited by a huge typhoon, which rarely visits that area, which forced the NPA to abandon their camps, and they encroached upon the ancestral domain of an IP group that caused a fracturing of that group that, again, exacerbated the conflict. I think one of the community became NPAs, and then the other was recruited by government, and they started, you know, war against each other, which resulted in that, you know,
Attorney Conde, so would you say then that if this administration is serious about taking climate action, is serious about attaining climate justice, then there is no other way but to talk peace now, because things are only going to get worse because we are running out of time.
Yes, I agree. There is no wrong time to talk peace. Every day is the right time to talk peace. But both parties should come to the negotiating table in good faith, and not just to gain a tactical advantage over the other. We have to accept that violations and abuses have been committed by both sides, and that there are hawks and doves on both sides, by the way. No, you cannot just, you know, see this issue as black and white. On both sides, there are genuine advocates of peace. Mm. But both sides also, there are hawks who will try to sabotage the peace talk. But that does not detract from the general principle that government should start talking peace. Even if there's just, you know, a small glimmer of hope, reopen the peace talks.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for joining us today, Roberto Cadiz, their former commissioner of the Commission on Human Rights. Really appreciate you coming to the show. Take care and keep safe. And from there, we're going to get an update on the weather now. Tropical Storm Karding maintains its strength while moving westward. Let's get the latest now from ABS-CBN's resident meteorologist, Ariel Rojas. Ariel, over to you.
Hi, good afternoon, Carmina. Tropical Storm Karding was last spotted 1,085 kilometers east of northern Luzon with sustained winds of 65 kilometers per hour and gusts up to 80 kilometers per hour. It is accelerating westward at 25 kilometers per hour. Today, the southwest monsoon or habagat and the trough or extension of Tropical Storm Karding will bring rains over Bataan, Calabarzon, Bicol region, most of Mimaropa except the central and southern parts of Palawan and the entire Visayas. Intense thunderstorms are also expected in Pangasinan and the rest of Central Luzon this afternoon. But starting today until Sunday, Tropical Storm Karding will continuously head westward while maintaining its strength. Wind signal number 2 will be the highest wind warning to be raised. And as early as tonight, wind signal number 1 will be hoisted in some parts of northern and central Luzon in anticipation of the storm. Karding is forecast to make its landfall on Sunday morning in the Cagayan Isabela area. It will then cross Cordillera and Ilocos before emerging over the West Philippine Sea by Sunday evening. It will exit the Philippine area of responsibility before noontime Monday, and it may intensify further into severe tropical storm as it moves further away from the country. Karding will bring heavy rains instead of strong winds. Sunday morning, at times heavy rains will be experienced in Batanes, Cagayan, and Isabela. By noontime until Monday early morning, moderate to heavy rains will also be felt in Cordillera, Ilocos provinces, and La Union. The residents of these areas will have to watch out and prepare against flooding and rain-induced landslides. Habagat will also be enhanced by the storm, which will also bring rains over parts of central and southern Luzon, Visayas, Zamboanga Peninsula, and northern Mindanao. Metro Manila, meanwhile, will be sunny in the morning with intense thunderstorms in the afternoon and evening this Friday until Sunday. That's the latest on the weather. This is Ariel Rojas. Happy weekend and keep safe. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ariel Rojas, there and back here in the newsroom. The Philippine Central Bank raises interest rates by 50 basis points. As widely expected, that's in a bid to tame inflation. The move follows a 50 basis point hike in August and an off-cycle 75 basis point adjustment in July. So far, the BSP has hiked rates by 225 basis points this year to 4.25%. It also raised its inflation outlook for 2022 to 5.6% from the previous forecast of 5.4%.
Given elevated uncertainty and the predominance of upside risks to the inflation environment, the Monetary Board recognized the need for follow-through action to anchor inflation expectations and prevent price pressures. The Monetary Board also continues to urge the national government to implement timely non-monetary interventions to mitigate the impact of persistent supply-side pressures on food and other commodity prices.
Other central banks also hiked rates to fight elevated inflation. The Bank of England raised its key interest rate by 50 basis points to 2.25%. The Swiss central bank, meanwhile, announced a 75 basis point increase in interest rates. Back here in Asia, Indonesia's central bank hiked its key interest rate for the second month in a row to combat rising inflation stoked by fuel prices. It raised rates by 50 basis points. In Japan, the outlier among major developed economies kept interest rates steady, only to be punished as traders pushed the yen to a record low against the dollar. This prompted the first intervention by Japanese authorities since 1998, buying the yen for dollars to support the currency. The Philippine Central Bank still seen to be too dovish despite Thursday's 50 basis point rate hike. BPI's lead economist June Neri says the BSP should be more aggressive, considering the path that the U.S. Federal Reserve is on.
They're not just signaling another 75 basis points on November, but that they will continue to hike up to 2023 and that they will keep rates high up to 2024. Well, this is a new thing that may have prompted Indonesia, for example, to hike more than anticipated by the market yesterday. And yet they don't have a current account problem in Indonesia. In our case, we have now the widest current account to GDP in the region, if not the world. That's a problem because while inflation is your ultimate target, the currency is an intermediate target. We all know that the weaker peso will have an influence on inflation later on.
Another economist, former Social Welfare Secretary Emmanuel Leyko, meanwhile, prefers to see more fiscal interventions rather than additional monetary actions.
The government is discussing next year's budget, and yet the budget looks like it's business as usual. I think this is the time when we should look at the budget and focus on what are essentials and what are not essential, and those that can be deferred, and not necessarily pushing the government to borrow money, because that is where the interest rate will matter. When we borrow money, we will have to pay interest rates, and the burden of the interest rate will be felt by the poor.
The Philippine Trade Department appeals to manufacturers of food products to manage their price increases this Christmas season. DTI Undersecretary Ruth Castelo says the advisable price adjustments should not exceed 10%. She says around 10 to 20 food manufacturers have notified the agency of price hikes.
We have already observed some increases, kaya nga yung paalala natin noon kung kaya na nila bumili na kahit pa isa-isa kasi alam ng DTI na gagalaw yung presyo. So na-observe na nga natin this week na tumaas na yung presyo ng mga ibang produkto like ham, yung Christmas ham, mayonnaise, pasta, medyo tumaas na sila ng presyo. We make do with what we have para talagang ma-intensify natin ang monitoring ng presyo. Well, hindi lang presyo, actually, pati yung standards ng produkto. And this is done all over the country.
Many stop stores in the Philippines will be rebranded. It will soon be called Uncle John's. The new name is in honor of the Robinsons Group's late founder, John Gokongwei Jr., the holdings company of the convenience store chain. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for keeping us company the whole week this week. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it to you on the ANC.